What I asked this morning, how does it go with the dependent origination? So attachment is feelings. Then it has got clinging and grasping. So the clinging is the attachment is the love that you feel. That's attachment. And then the clinging
okay.
is when you want to keep staying with that person.
No. You see.
And grasping.
Wait. These are all English words that condition suffering. Your question is, how does it link or connect to the Paticca-samuppada, which is a dwelling? It's a very good question. So you have to understand the dwelling as taught by the Buddha is the Pali words. And these Pali words are subject to a lot of English translation. So what is more important is, we start off with the dwelling, okay? Avijja Paccaya Sankhara. What is avijja? Ignorant, okay? Ignorant of what? Ignorant of what? The three right view, of course. Law of karma, law of mind, means paticca samuppada, how you function as a human being. Law of karma means it governs life and existence, all the form and mind subject to that nature's law. You reap what you sow, and every living being, we are born out of karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. Then the final third right view, which is spiritual right view, is Dhamma Niyama. Means the nature's order of truth. So these three right view, when you don't have, you have avijja. So Dhamma include four noble truths. You understand? Then the other essential Dhamma are spin-off from the four noble truths. So Dhamma Niyama is essentially the Buddha's teaching, but with particular emphasis on four noble truths and its three turning. Then within the four noble truths, you have the Noble Eightfold Path. The first path factor is right view, samadhi. So the three right view that I mentioned are the spiritual right view that the Buddha is interested in. So when you are ignorant of these three right view, you will have avijja. So avijja means you don't have the wisdom and the understanding of this law that governs life. That's why most people are confused. Living beings are confused. So what do they do? One thing to know, one thing to experience, they go and create thinking. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara means dependent on an avijja, the heedless thinking arises. This heedless thinking is born of lack of wisdom. So when you are heedless, you think a lot. There you lack mindfulness, you lack spiritual quality. The five mental hindrances are all there. We have already covered this one. If you have the hindrance, means you lack spiritual faculty. You lack spiritual faculty means you lack mindfulness to develop the understanding. So all these are related and connected to the teaching. So from this link, when you have delusion, ignorance, when you lack understanding, you condition the activity of thinking. Avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara is all your sankhara movement, the content of consciousness. All these are the movement. One of them is karmic activity. Visual commentary try to use this, then they say this is karmic. Karmic activity, or they call it karma, that condition, rebirth, consciousness. So by explaining that is easy, logical. But the actual paticca samuppada is not over three lifetimes. The actual one is within the moment, every instant, every moment. So if it's not karmic volition or karmic consciousness, then what else can it be? The word sankhara is everything that your mind can do. So your thought process, your thinking. When you think, where do you go to? You go to your memory, isn't it? Most people think according to memory. So what is memory? It's one of the organs, isn't it? The organ that is responsible for thought consciousness, isn't it? True or not? Huh? Can follow or not? Well, your eye is responsible for seeing consciousness. The ear, hearing. Smell, taste, tactile. So the brain is thought consciousness. So when you make contact with the brain through your thinking, like the physical experiment, upon contact, what happens? The light bulb lights up. Remember? So it's like you become conscious of your thought. The thought consciousness arises. So when it arises, this is vijnana, the pure consciousness. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana. Vijnana is the pure consciousness. You can follow. Then this consciousness, because of your habitual tendency, your views, opinion, and conditioning, from memory, it will input the content. So your content is based on your views, opinion, conditioning, belief system, your phobia, whatever that you hold. So this content is the one that conditions wrong thought. That's why after vijnana, paccaya namarup. Namarup is your five aggregate of form and mind, your thought over here. Your thought. Over here. And this is the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. So when nama rupa arise, what happened? The paticca samuppada say dependent on sense basis, then only it can arise thought consciousness. That's why nama rupa paccaya salayatana. You know what is salayatana now? Sense basis. Then salayatana, condition one. Salayatana, condition, contact, which is pasat. Okay? Then contact, condition one. Feeling, okay? Then feeling, condition one. Yes, craving. Craving in Pali is called tanha. Oh, sorry, there's a V. Yeah? So this word is the reason why the second noble truth, the cause of arising of suffering, is called craving. Then upon craving arise, is straightaway conditioned. What is it? Grasping. So these are English words. The Pali word is what? Upadana or upadana. Then this one condition. Becoming, bhava. Then it condition the hence arise the whole mass of suffering. Whole mass of dukkha. So your question is, you should ask, what is craving? What is grasping? What is becoming? Of course, this one is automatic. But just now in the text where I share, I use a few English words. I say clinging, okay? Grasping, which is this one. Then attention, remember? So your question is, how is it linked to the paticca samuppada? Is that your question? No. These are the three things. Wait. Don't jump the gun. These are the three words that we discussed just now. Then you ask me to give example of clinging. And I said, I give you the doctor and other things. Remember? Yeah. Then grasping, attachment is to your loved one. Understand? Then when you grasp, means you hold. You understand? So the actual Paticca Samuppada, you must understand, without wisdom, without mindfulness, from here to here is very fast. This whole process is very fast. And without yoniso manasikara, feeling will automatically become craving. Without the wisdom, born of Dhamma understanding. So here, people always advise you to cut a feeling. You cannot cut unless you have wisdom. So without wisdom, you cannot. So from feeling become craving. What is craving? Of course, the text tell you three types of craving. But the most common one is what? Sensual craving, which is craving of the senses, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. Then the other two is craving to become and craving not to become. So in life, when you see something or hear something or smell something or taste something or tactile feel something or through thought memory you recall something, this craving is always there in the form of what? Desire, understand? Wanting, but not strong yet, understand? You understand? So craving is the beginning of the negativity of mind state. You crave, you want to have it. Then when you cannot get what you want, you become unhappy, miserable. Then you skip, you plan, you become more determined. You want. So the wanting, the strong wanting is grasping. Understand? You grasp at it, but you haven't acted out of it. You understand? Becoming is when you become the thing. Let's say you are lustful, the craving, you got desire. Then you become lustful, this one. Understand? Then that lust manifests, you become that lust. Understand?
Take an example. Let's say somebody sees a mango.
Yeah.
It's all very nice and juicy.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that's the beginning part, the sense, the feeling is there, the liking.
Depend on that person.
Mm.
If that person has Dhamma, no. He doesn't crave. He will understand. Like this morning, we smell the food. We understand there is food down there. Sometimes the smell is very favorable. You like that smell. But you know it's the condition, just the kitchen cook. So there is no craving, no attachment, because there are causes and conditions for you to arise. I see mango, okay? And I understand it belongs to somebody, understand? Whether it's on the tree or the fruit seller in the store, understand? You understand? Or you just buy. You go home, put on the table, ribbon saw. This type of example, okay or not? Yeah? Then you think Raymond got craving. Huh? No, you just bought one. My wife bought one. Hey, cheap, they say. There is no craving, understand? Craving means what? Without condition, you also want. No? Understand? You crave for it. No? You desire it. No? You understand? Huh? If you have the means, you can afford, you can buy it, understand? That's why the Buddha during his time, he was invited to all the king and the wealthy people's house. He also take the good food on. Understand? It doesn't mean he got craving.
the a durian, and then you just say, ah, okay, you like
I
it.
I think the fruit is not so good an example.
Oh.
Because what is all this forbid? This one is one the textbook example one. The 17th top moment one, they talk about the determining intention and all the top moment, and then forget about it. Without mindfulness, you cannot see all those things. Those are pitama. Understand? The real happening is different. The real happening is, let's say you saw somebody you don't like, you recollect two memories. This fellow last night could have cheated you before, or con you before, or abuse you, or say certain things. Then you perceive him with what? Negativity. There is negative craving, anger, hatred. Understand? Or oh, you saw a very handsome man. Let's say before you get married to a Raymond. Okay? You get attracted. You are somehow coming, maybe from the past or what. You got affinity, you get attracted. Then you have craving to become either married to him or to get him to be your boyfriend or whatever. So they call it infatuation. Remember, during the school days, early days, you get infatuated with the girl you saw. Oh, for you, it's the man you saw, or the boy you saw. Okay? So the infatuation is the beginning of craving. So you desire, you crave to get him to become your maybe good friend or boyfriend, girlfriend, or later on commit yourself, get married, and become a couple. So that part is craving. But let's say somebody, he liked, he craved, no response. That girl, sorry, I don't know. Then what happened? No, the desire becomes stronger, understand or not? The desire becomes stronger because he every day go and think about it, you know? Understand or not? Then go and, what you call, imagine using the thought process, fantasize, they create all those lustful thoughts, understand? Then what happened? Then he grabs at the thing already, understand? Grabs at the thing already, but he haven't become that thing. So when he grabs, that time is very strong craving and desire. Then when he acted out of it, he become that lustful nature, that is the becoming. He wanted to do something, right? Transgression, right? That is becoming. Then when you act out of it, you take that birth, become that rapist, understand? Yeah, that is a very clear cut example. Let my daughter share. Yeah.
I suddenly recall a moment with Sister Yun Chan when we were at one of the trips. I was thinking maybe the situation would be a good example.
Ah, good. Okay.
So I hope you don't mind, Sister Yun Chan. I was sitting next to her as one of the temple we went to at Fan Tsing San. The nun was giving out the beads.
Ah, yeah.
So everybody got one. They were very generous. Mm. And then she got hers, and after that I got mine. And then I recall she mentioned, oh, mine doesn't look nice. There's one bead that is not clear.
Yeah.
Okay. Then after that she said, I think I want to go and change.
Uh-huh.
Then when I saw she was going to go and change, I said, oh, it's okay, you take mine. And I took hers. So from that exchange, I think the 12 links.
Yeah.
So maybe you can use that example.
So you see, it could be a bracelet or whatever. Huh? They give you, is it a bracelet? Oh, the 108 bits one. Okay. Huh? That long bits, the Mahayana bits, the counting one. You do what they call chanting meditation one. Huh? So that one is a good example, because when you see there is not what you want, not up to your expectation, maybe you got defect or what you want to change. So what happened during that time? Upon contact, your eye, which is the seeing consciousness, it will trigger off feeling. That feeling you don't like. Understand? That is a negative craving. Understand? And this craving has not become a grasping yet. You haven't become aggressive yet. Understand? If you become grasping, means you become aggressive really. Very strong desire to change it or to get it from somebody. But you just say you want to go and request for it. So it's not a grasping yet. But if let's say you go and change and people say cannot, what is given, then what you do?
Become a bad
difficult
customer.
You. Use the mic, use the mic. Now my hear God, hear God.
Then becoming takes place, and then you become a difficult customer.
You become a difficult customer.
Yeah, yes. You have become the so-called labeled
then
tough customer to deal with. The customer
to become that, then you take birth and become the difficult customer. Means you already go beyond grasping. You already become that anger, that aversion, that dislike already. Then that one continue to trigger off misunderstanding or what. Then if they insist that you cannot or you have to pay more, then what happened? You are born into that difficult customer that want to do something. Understand? So the becoming is the stage before it takes the transgression. You before you transgress into action to scold people, to tell people off, and to become like very, very difficult. So that example is more easy to comprehend. Can follow? So don't go and like trigger of intellectual understanding. Your paticca samuppada is not an intellectual understanding. It happened in the mind and it moves very fast. Even they tell you in the Abhidhamma, 1 second, split second, billions of consciousness can pass by. You remember? So you know how fast this is or not? Like a lightning flash. The Diamond Sutta. 一切以为法，如梦幻幻，如露亦如电，应作如是观。 You have to comprehend. So to see all this movement, you must have mindfulness with the stability of awareness. Then you can be at the moment of contact. It doesn't move. Then when feeling, which is the seven universal, is also inside that. And if you want to stay at a feeling, feeling will become pure feeling. It doesn't move to craving. That's why I say, depend whether that person got Dhamma or not. If he got Dhamma, it doesn't become craving. Why should he crave? Even people who have understanding, seeing a mango or a durian does not lead to craving. Craving is without condition also you want. Then there is craving. So initially, it's just desire, craving. Then after that, you still cannot get, then you plan, you scheme, and you become more and more aggressive. This is grasping. Your whole thought process is focused on that. Understand? Then after that, you become that thing. Can be fear or anger or lust or whatever. You become that. But it hasn't manifest out yet. When it manifests out, it takes birth based, not you are born, no. You are born into that transgression. No? Means the last two people become a rapist. This rapist or difficult customer is the one that takes birth. Understand? No? You are born into that state. Okay? Oh, sorry. Okay. Okay. I think we better continue. Otherwise, you will be stuck. I leave it there. You can leave it there. No, no, they have. They have a lot. Now we got four. Okay. Tell me, you continue. Part Sutta, next page, page 23.
Chapter 4, 1.1. Emphasis on previous lessons. Emptiness. 1. Emptiness or sunyata in Pali is a term frequently used in the Mahayana tradition versus that term non-self or anatta, anatta in Pali, which is the equivalent term that is frequently used in the Theravada tradition. 2. Importance of understanding why our physical form and all external forms can also be expressed as form is impermanent, brings about suffering when we illusively cling onto it without understanding, and its empty or anatta nature. To understand it clearly, we must have the ability to see its manifestation via mind's perception with clear mindfulness to recognize it as conditioned arising phenomenon. Hence, it is not a permanent unchanging entity that we can cling onto or hold onto as the I and the me, or own as the mind, thus seeing it as empty, sunyata, or anatta. Because it has no apparent reality, also a cultivator needs to develop the wisdom to understand why form is external manifestation of mind by a clear and stable daily mindfulness cultivation. 3. Form delusion can be very powerful. Hence, if you can't see form, you can't see mind, because form is much grosser, whereas mind is very subtle. However, with wisdom born of the direct seeing, form and mind delusion will cease to be, leading to enlightenment in the here and the now. 4. Definition of samana. A samana is a renounced holy person in the road seriously cultivating the Buddha Dharma as taught by the Buddha. He or she is also usually referred to as one who is already enlightened. The term is used as opposed to the other term Brahmins, who studied the Vedas during the time of Sakyamuni Buddha. To a samana, spiritual understanding is very important, because without spiritual understanding, one cannot be free. One cannot understand the problems and realities of life and existence. There is a recently printed Dharma book for free distribution by Wei, and the title of the book is Samana, on the life of the late Langta Mahabowa. Our Kaya Nika Fund has also donated towards its printing for free distribution. Hence, we were given some copies of these books for free distribution by Wei. And anyone who is interested in having a copy can request it from Brother Yo.
Okay, wait, huh? We go back. You see, there is this summary that I mentioned under 1.1 subheading 2 towards the end. You need to develop wisdom to understand why form is external manifestation of mind. We are a clear and stable daily mindfulness. Can you understand this statement? Yeah? Why is form termed as external manifestation of mind? If you have a clear and stable daily mindfulness, you will see. You will understand this statement. Can follow? Yeah? How do you come to see form?
Perception.
Perception. So when you are mindful, aware, you are at the moment of perception, understand? It's not a knowledge and a theory. If you take it as a knowledge and theory, oh, form is external manifestation of mind. Then people ask you, why? There is your answer, But you really saw it in your awareness-based meditation when you are mindful. then you can be at the moment of perception. Every moment you perceive something, whether through your seeing consciousness or hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile or thought process, you can see. See means what? The awareness is aware of it. So when you are cultivating with the awareness, then this awareness witness it. You don't have to believe. You don't have to quote somebody. Understand what? Before you perceive, it does not manifest, isn't it? When you perceive means what? The mind manifests to perceive the external form, isn't it? That's why that form that you perceive is an external manifestation of mind, your mundane mind. You understand? But this is not a theory, like I always say. Don't listen, accept, believe. Then when people ask you, you cannot explain, you say, brother, Theo say one. Or according to the Buddha. Then you won't learn. To learn means have an open mind. Don't believe. Why external manifestation? Like I inquire yourself, teach you. How do you see form? Then like Sui say, you need to perceive it. Who perceive? The mind perceive. Then external form arise. So what is the external form? It's an external manifestation of what the mind do. Understand? That's why form is external manifestation of mind. Can follow? So this is very important. Without mindfulness, you cannot. Then when you see it, that's why you know it's unreal. Form is unreal. Why? Externally, if you are mindful, aware, you can see the paticca-samuppada, the dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, how it manifests. How causes and conditions created the arising of the form. Depending on causes and conditions, it arises. So it's already not so real. There is dependent originating. Without condition, it doesn't exist. No reality at all. Then the other thing is, how do you know that form? You perceive it through memory, which is an image. Even more unreal. That's why you will see the unreality of form. Form is not what you think. Very solid, very tangible. Just the knowing of it, the understanding of it, the awakening through the mindfulness and the Dhamma cultivation that awaken your understanding is totally different. That awareness allow you to witness all this, to see all this and to awaken to this truth. That's why I say after that form delusion, which is very powerful, can be overcome. Hence, if you can't see form, you can't see mind. Your form is much more grosser. The mind is more subtle. However, with wisdom born of the direct seeing, mindfulness, awareness, form and mind delusion will cease to be. That is the meaning. So when they cease to be, you realize enlightenment, leading to enlightenment in the here and the now. Means external form has got no power over you. Everything that you perceive through your mind has got no power over you. Because you saw the creation process, the delusion. Dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. And everything just arise and pass away, come and go, come and go. Perception, come and go, come and go. How real can it be? Feeling, come and go. Did you die? You didn't die. So how can feeling be you? How can perception be you? Perception is just an image. When you have the direct seeing, you see everything, external form. They are all dependent originating. Not a permanent unchanging entity. No reality, empty. Condition like that, things arise. Sustaining condition continue, that it sustains its existence. Then when condition ceases to be, it ceases to be. Gone, no more. Like every segment of your life. Can you understand? This is how you should perceive it, not through knowledge, not through repeating what you hear, what you read, or what you learn from people. I mean, you can listen to my sharing. Then you have to contemplate, reflect, and investigate into it, like the Buddha said. Investigate means what? Through your own stability of mindfulness, you train yourself to actually check on it, whether it matches with your direct experience or not. So that is not a theory. But you use the thought process to reason and grasp and cling onto that knowledge, thinking that you know, you never learn. Your concept idea become knowledge. Knowledge become intellect. It's not wisdom. It cannot free you. It cannot bring about awakening. It cannot transform your understanding. You will continue to grasp, cling, hold through delusion. But you will never believe that this is not you, especially your physical body and mind as a human being. You believe or not, before you know the Dhamma. They say you are not what you are. So all this, when you go through the spiritual cultivation, you start to develop understanding and awakening. Then the understanding and awakening, which is wisdom, is very different from thought-based cultivation, which is knowledge. So knowledge cannot free, cannot liberate the mind. You need wisdom born of the direct seeing, the awareness nature within. Okay? So this one is very important. Eh? Yeah. Then we move on. Eh? Next section.
1.2, essential understanding. In the recap, Brother Teo will emphasize on the following important dhamma. 1. The importance of understanding true emptiness is wonderful existence, leading to our ability to live life meaningfully and to the fullest. 2. True blessings comes from your own cultivation via karmic inheritance and nothing else. That is not due to your luck, feng shui, etc. 3. The importance of cultivating a very stable psyche or mindfulness, leading to heedfulness or apamada throughout the day.
So this one is a constant reminder. Yeah? You have to develop it, stabilize it, and develop heedfulness within life, in the moment, moment to moment, as you live your life. So heedfulness is very important. Okay, next one.
4. Importance of repentance and asking for forgiveness sincerely. When you forgive someone, you actually free yourself from the evil roots of anger, hatred, and delusion.
So understand this, then you can do it. Because to forgive is to free yourself, not to say you forgive somebody, the ego so big. And that's when you have hatred towards that person, you become angry, emotional, envy, jealousy, also. You suffer, isn't it? These are evil roots, make you evil. Why can't you develop the understanding if you are ready to forgive? Then you free yourself. Means that hatred is no more. The anger is no more. The misunderstanding is no more. Because you have love. He is the way he is. Deluded people do deluded things. Angry people do angry things. Selfish people do selfish things. So when you see this, understand this, you are ever willing to come to terms with the moment, with the reality that arises, that need to ask for forgiveness, that free yourself. Okay? Yeah, we move on.
Part 2. Heart Sutta Lesson 4, Introduction 1, page 10 to 12. Of Master Xuanhua's commentary. 4.1, Master Xuanhua's very unique birth and life history. On Kuan Yin Bodhisattva birthday, The master dreamed that an old woman wearing a patchwork robe and a string of beads appeared to guide him. This unique birth and life history of Master Xuan Hua provided the conditions for Brother Teo to also share a bit of his unique spiritual affinities and encounters with Guanyin Bodhisattva in his early years of cultivation, 1986, and the details are as described by him during the sharing on that day. For details, please refer to the web link of 16 GB USB that contains the recording as produced by Brother Sui An. In 1986, Brother Teo and his whole family took refuge under Master Xuan Hua, and apart from taking the five precepts, the other condition is to finish the 10,000 vows of reciting homage to thee, my original teacher, Namo Sakyamuni Buddha, within 3 months. Brother Teo completed it within less than 2 months. According to Brother Teo, this bowing is done mindfully and with a very strong sadha of faith and viriya, or the spiritual zeal, can lead one to a very stable daily mindfulness very quickly.
Yeah, this is very true. So do we constantly develop the bowing with awareness? Don't try to know. Body and mind move as one. Initially, it doesn't come. Never mind. Patient, like Po Cheng said, do until it comes. You have to be patient. When it comes, you will know one. With the awareness that surface, suddenly your bowing becomes different. Suddenly, the physical body and the awareness become one. Then everything you do, the awareness is real. That is the real training. When you develop sati, when mind enters sati, it is like that. Everything you do is in sati. Kaya nupasana. All action, all movement in the present moment. Throughout the day, you just aware. Then because the awareness is so stable, the mental one, the subtle craving, desire, delusion, reaction, stirring of mind, all you can see. Last time you never see. No matter how fast the Patisyasamupada is, when you are mindful and aware, you can be at that moment before it input the content of consciousness. Before that views, opinion, and conditioning wants to go in, the habitual tendency, everything. That's why you can prevent it from arising. Initially, you can't, where you lack mindfulness. So it arises already, then only you want to do something about it. Like you say, I still have anger. It's not to say that when anger arises, this awareness of it. No. He lost control, and the Patisyasamupada moved so far, he become very angry. Then the thought, recollect, yeah, just now, why did I become so angry? Then he say, I still got anger. Then sometimes they go to report, yeah, I saw my anger. Are you at the moment where anger manifests? That is the third way, awareness, be with it. Did you do that? You do that, yes, you saw your anger through awareness. Not after the thing over already, your memory, your thought recollect and recall. That one is not you saw. That one is you recall. Understand? That's why ability to see is very different. You need awareness to be aware to see. Then the memory, everything, you use for daily living. That's why Jai Krishnamurti able to even go so deep. He said memory got two types. One is mechanical memory, non-psychological. Normal memory, that you use to learn things and other things. Remember your address, how you sign your check and other things. The other one is your psychological memory. Your phobia, your fear, your insecurity, your scars of memory, all these are psychological memory. This one you shouldn't accumulate. When you accumulate and you develop delusion, you attach to it, you cling onto it, then it constantly trigger off fear, insecurity. That's why you will have phobia. You will have what they call nightmare. Then it will condition you into what they call depression. Because that thing is already so deeply accumulated into your subconscious and unconscious, the psyche, when it happened, that intense fear, that phobia, that caused it to arise deep inside. That's why to root out that one, you need wisdom, you need understanding. You need to relax, maintain awareness, to see clearly and awaken to it. Then when it loses its power, then you realize all this get released out and it never accumulate again. That's why to root out habitual tendency is not easy. To root out all this deep phobia, fear, is not easy. You need very stable mindfulness to awaken to the teaching. Okay? Where were we? 2.2, huh? Okay, you continue. Yeah.
2.2 is bowing another technique to develop mindfulness. Question 1. Is bowing another technique to develop mindfulness that is similar to walking and sitting meditation? The understanding of it is very important. There is not much meaning to your cultivation if you just follow instruction without understanding. You must understand why you bow and what you are doing in the name of meditation. That is, do not just follow the instruction to do certain things via any method or technique, etc., thinking that when you are doing all that, then you are meditating. The real meditation as taught by the Buddha cannot begin unless one has developed the training of the mind to be heedful with sati or mindfulness within. The various objects of meditation used in conjunction with the various methods and techniques of meditation are only initial skillful means used to train the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought most of the time. The main purpose of the object of meditation is to anchor the mind to it so that one is always in the moment, mindful and aware of the object of meditation without thought. Once this training is done, the trained mind will be silent without thought, with awareness within, and such a mind is in the meditative state to see things as they are, without any concepts, ideas, or words. When the above is understood, then any method or technique can be also be used to train the mind to be heedful initially, but finally we need to develop the ultimate meditative mind with silent inner awareness, where the mind must have no dwelling as per the Diamond Sutra. Then one must let go of the meditation object and silence one's mind to develop the more refined mindfulness within. It's just like swimming. The float is just like an initial skillful means, object of meditation, to help keep one afloat. And as long as one still holds onto the float, then one will never understand the actual swimming, because to swim with the float and without the float are two totally different experiences. Bowing or reverential salutation is one of the 10 meritorious actions, and it is a very important virtue that comes with so many benefits and advantages. It is part of the opening and closing puja or devotional practices as recommended by the Buddha to help one establish faith or sadha in the Buddha and his teaching, followed by the spiritual zeal or virya and the development of sati or mindfulness, which is the third spiritual faculty. One can then bow mindfully and with understanding via a composed mind with strong sadha and virya. Bowing is not idol worshipping, but instead it is reverential salutation done out of great respect and gratitude for someone who has taught us so well, like the Buddha, who is the fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. Since it is a meritorious action, the field of merit is immeasurable. If it is done with understanding to the worthy or enlightened one, such merits can be made use of to arise the causes and conditions for us to progress quickly along the path of Dhamma via invoking the power of merit. Apart from helping us to develop the spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, and Sati, bowing can also help us to cultivate humility and help exercise our body while establishing ourselves in mindfulness training. Also, according to the Buddha, four things grow if we pay respect sincerely to our elders and worthy ones. The four things are Ayu, Vano, Sukhang, and Balang. Their meanings are Ayu, long life, Vano, fair complexion, Sukhang, happiness, and Balang, strength, both spiritual and physical. All these four blessings are very important for having a good life.
So make a note, the benefits of bowing. So much benefit, and it can bring out the way. Not only is mindfulness training, it's a meritorious action. Then, through all this meritorious action, you do it frequently with understanding. You never know. Somebody you pay respect to, if he is one of the enlightened ones, or Aryan, or unique, or great. Then, like the Hokkien say, Jia Di Liao, you know what Jia Di Liao, it cannot finish. Means the merits that you suddenly accumulate without you knowing. Because you only pay respect, understand? And respect is one of the marital sections. It's a virtue. It's a parami. So your ability to pay respect, four things go when you pay respect to your elders and the worthy one. Ayu, wana, sukang, palang. These four things, most people want it. Ayu is long life. Wana is fair complexion. Sukang is joy, happiness. Then palang is strength, physical and mental strength, spiritual and mental physical strength. So all these are beautiful. Huh? Okay, the next one.
2.3. Can you show us how to do the bowing? Question 2. Can you show us how to do the bowing? Is it the Theravada tradition 5-point prostration or the Mahayana tradition, Mahayana way of standing up, then going down to prostrate and come up again? Brother Teo replied, whichever way that suits you more, use it. The most important thing is when you bow, do it mindfully, with very strong faith and virya, and do it with proper understanding. Always remember, one can only do one thing at a time. That is, either you are mindful with the moment in silent awareness without thought, or you are lost in thought, hence heedless. Bowing mindfully means body and mind move as one.
Listen to this. Body and mind move as one in harmony without thought. Okay? Continue.
When the mind is composed and without the five hindrances of mind, mindfulness will be there naturally. So develop the faith, compose the mind, then chant the salutation to Sakyamuni Buddha, and then bow mindfully to develop the sati or mindfulness within. After a while, if you are sincere, patient, and doing it with understanding, then it can bring about the conditions of sati or mindfulness to arise. Mindfulness arises through understanding and perseverance, and when mindfulness is firmly established, there will be so much joy. The mind is so silent, so light, so composed, so still, yet fully aware within throughout the day. In every movement and every action, there is so much clarity and awareness within the heart. It then starts to see things as they are, and direct knowledge and vision of the reality keep on arising. Things that are there all this while is three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, etc., which the normal living being never see, suddenly become very clear. This is the reason why Brother Teo always said to us, truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. 4.4. The three great Buddhist traditions, are they all the same or are they different? Question 3. Are the teaching of our three great Buddhist traditions of Theravada, Mahayana, and Vajrayana all the same or are they different? Brother Teo replied, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, like the Four Noble Truths, which includes the Noble Eightfold Path, are essential all the same for
essentially, all. Essentially all the same.
Are essentially all the same for all the three traditions. It is only how they approach it that makes it appear to be very different because of different commentaries and interpretation of suttas via words and terminology used, and all this complicates the matter further as words are subjected to various interpretations. What is more important is not to argue and create any unnecessary and unhealthy division and misunderstanding within the various traditions, but instead to have an open mind and avoid all negativity. Make use of whatever that is relevant, useful, and suitable for each of us to progress along the path of Dhamma. By following the Buddha's advice to the Kalama, as stated in the Kalama Sutta, harmony, love, and understanding following the Noble Eightfold Path to resolve all issues amicably is very important. That is no more negativity.
So remember this, huh? Resolve all issues amicably following Noble Eightfold Path. Then there is no more negativity. That's how you apply the Dhamma, using wisdom to act. Okay, then continue.
2.5. Difference between Pure Land, Western Paradise, and Nibbana. Question 4. Can you explain the difference between the Pure Land teaching that talks about the Western Paradise and Nibbana as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha? Brother Chia replied, Pure Land teaching is based on Amitabha Buddha's great vows, which created the Pure Land, also called the Western Paradise. For those disciples or cultivators who have the affinity with him to continue with their cultivation and perfection, by virtue of Amitabha Buddha and all the other great bodhisattvas like Kuan Yin, Manjushri, etc., great cultivation, their vows are very powerful because of their wisdom and perfection. Hence, this leads to their great vows to be integrated into nature's law, thereby enabling their vows to have such special ability to create such pure land and manifest naturally, thus helping the cultivators and their disciples who know how to connect directly to their vows without themselves having to be there or at any specific place to help. This Pure Land or the Western Paradise is in the heart of those who have developed the cultivation and have the ability to connect directly to Amitabha Buddha's vow via their silent mind with very strong faith while chanting Amitabha Buddha's name or his mantra. Chant until no one is chanting. That is the vibration and the mind has become one in perfect harmony and synchrony. This pure land or the Western paradise is not within the 31 place of existence as taught by the Sakyamuni Buddha. 2.6. What are these 31 planes of existence? So question 5. What are these 31 planes of existence? Father Thiel replied, according to Theravada tradition, the 31 planes of existence are the realms of existence within samsara or existence where living beings have to undergo birth and death following their karma. It can also be called the three worlds. Number 1. The formless world or Arupa Loka. Four formless realms, realms of neither perception nor non-perception, nothingness, infinite consciousness and infinite space. 2. The form world or Rupa Loka, 16 Brahma realms. 3. The central world or Kama Loka, 6 Deva or heavenly realms, 1 human realm, 4 woeful states or suffering realms. The central realms are further divided into 1. Suffering world of the central realms or Kama Dugati, and they are the four woeful realms of demons, animal spectres or hungry ghosts, and the hell beings. 2. Kama Sugati, or the central realms of happiness, are the human realms and the six Deva realms. The Mahayana call it the six realms of birth and death, with the one human realm plus four woeful realms remaining exactly the same, and the only difference is the Mahayana has only one heavenly realm to define all the six Deva realms, the 16 Brahma realms, the four formless realms, hence total 1 plus 4 plus 6 plus 16 plus 4 is equal to 31 realms or plane of existence. Note, no thought, ever mindful and constantly meditative, imply ever mindful to constantly cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path is heedfulness. Dhammapada verse 23.
Chapter 5.
Chapter 5, part 1. Recapitulation and emphasis on the previous lesson 1.1. Introducing Master Xuan Hua, 45th patriarch of Sakyamuni Buddha lineage. In 1948, after 3,000 miles of travel, Master Xuan Hua reached Nanhua Monastery near Canton and received the wonderful mind-to-mind transmission of all Buddhas from the Venerable Master Xu Yun and became the 45th patriarch in the line of succession from Sakyamuni Buddha. Master Xu Yun is also the teacher of Master Huo Yuan, the late abbot of this Mahayana Vihara, Wu Bin Jing Se. 1.2. Introducing the late Venerable Master Xu Yun, 44th patriarch in the line of succession from Sakyamuni Buddha. Xu Yun was born on 26 April 1840 in Fujian, China, and passed away in 1959 at the age of 120 years old. He is one of the most influential Chan masters of the past two centuries and arguably the most important in modern Chinese history. Unlike Catholicism and other branches of Christianity, there was no organization in China that embraced all monastics in China, not even all monastics within the same sect. Traditionally, each monastery was autonomous, with authority resting on each respective abbot. The change with the rule of the Communist Party in 1953, the Chinese Buddhist Association was established at a meeting with 121 delegates in Beijing. The meeting also elected a chairman, four honorary chairmen, 7 vice chairmen, a secretary general, 3 deputy secretaries general, 18 members of the standing committee, and 93 directors. The elected honorary chairmen were the Dalai Lama, the Panchen Lama, and the Grand Lama of Inner Mongolia, and Shi Yun himself. So Chan is less well known in the West compared to Japanese Zen. The teaching of Shi Yun has persisted within Asia, and he is still a major figure of Pure Land Buddhism. In East Asia, outside of China, the influence of his teaching is strongest in Southeast Asia, particularly in Vietnam and Myanmar, as well as in America, where his teaching was transmitted to well-known monastic students such as Venerable Xuanhua and Venerable Ji Ding Sakya and Venerable Po Yuan Sakya. 1. Middle Age and Enlightenment. At the age of 43, Shi Yun had then left the home life for more than 20 years. But he had not yet completed his practice in the past. He had not repaid his parents' kindness, and so he vowed to again make a pilgrimage to Nanhai, from Fa Hua Temple all the way to Cheng Liang Peak at Mount Wutai, or five peak mountains of the northwest, the Bodhi Mandala of Manjushri. He made one full prostration every 3 steps. He prayed for the rebirth of his parents in the Pure Land. Along the way, Shi Yun is said to have met a beggar called Wenzi, who twice saved his life. After talking with the monk at the five peak mountain, Shi Yun came to believe that the beggar had been a manifestation of Manjushri. Having achieved singleness of mind, Shi Yun traveled west and south, taking his way to Tibet. He visited many monasteries and holy places, including the Potala, the seat of the Dalai Lama, and Tashil Honpo Monastery, the seat of the Panchen Lama. He traveled to India and Ceylon, and then across the Sea of Burma. During this time of wandering, Shi Yun felt his mind clearing and his health growing stronger. Shi Yun composed a large number of poems during this period. After returning to China, during Shi Yun's 53rd year, he joined other venerable Master Pu Zhao, Yue Xia, and Ying Lian, Lotus Seal, to cultivate together. They climbed Jiuhua Mountain and prepared the hut on Cui Feng Summit, where Dharma Master Pu Zhao founded the Mahavaipurya Buddha Avatamsaka Flower Adornment Sutra. When Shi Yun was 56, the abbot Yue Lang of Gaoming Temple in Jiangzhou planned to convene a continuous 12-week session of Dhyana meditation. Preparing to leave, the group asked Shi Yun to go first. After reaching Xigang, he had to cross the water but had no money. The ferry left without him. As he walked along the river edge, he suddenly lost his balance and fell into the rushing water, where he broke helplessly for a day and night and was caught in a fisherman's net. He was carried to a nearby temple where he was revived and treated for his injuries. Feeling ill, he nevertheless returned to Yangzhou. When asked by Gao Ming whether he could participate in the upcoming week of meditation, he politely declined without revealing his illness. The temple had rules that those who were invited had to attend or else face punishment. In the end, Gao Ming had Shi Yun beaten with a wooden ruler. He willingly accepted this punishment, although it wasn't his condition. For the next several days, Shi Yun sat in continuous meditation. In his autobiography, he wrote,
In the purity of my singleness of mind, I forgot all about my body. 20 days later, my illness vanishes completely. From the moment with all my thoughts entirely wiped out, my practice took effect throughout the day and night. My steps were as swift as if I was flying in the air. One evening after meditation, I opened my eyes and suddenly saw I was in brightness similar to broad daylight, in which I could see everything inside and outside the monastery. But he knew that this occurrence was only a mental state, and that it was not at all rare. He did not become attached to this achievement, but continued his single-minded investigation to the topic, who is mindful of the Buddha, over and over again. He delved into this topic without interruption. During the 12th lunar month, on the third evening of the 8th week of the session, after 6 hours of sitting meditation, the attendant made his round, filling up the teacups. Shi Yin's hand was burned by spilling boiling water, and his cup fell to the floor. At the sound of the crash, the root of his doubt was instantly severed. He was joyous beyond words at having fulfilled his lifelong ambition. It was as if he had just awakened from a dream, and he observed how the conditions of the past unraveled. 2. Shi Yin's reverse explanation says, a cup fell to the ground with a sound clearly heard. As space was pulverized, the mad mind came to a stop. 1.3. Meaning of be accord with condition or flow with the Dhamma. The word accord means not to receive. Hence, there is harmony and no conflict. Conflict means disharmony, argument, etc. So to flow with the Dhamma means the same, that is, don't receive or argue, via accepting things as they are, or by seeing things as they are without delusion or letting be. It is like martial arts. If we were to resist or defend via rigid kung fu, then both will get hurt. But if you can use Tai Chi to flow with it, then Tai Chi will send the force back to the aggressor, who will be hurt by their own force. 1.4. The phenomenal world is an illusionary world of consciousness. Definition of phenomenon. Anything that is perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. Then how do you know the world? Via our consciousness and mental perception, isn't it? And since consciousness and mental perception are just mental images, it is our mind that arise and pass away continuously. Hence the reason why it is said the phenomenal world is actually an illusionary world of consciousness, empty. The Mahayana also got a very famous saying. Perception of form is consciousness, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. This is the most profound quote quoted by the Surangama Sutra, and the enlightened one will understand it. Now, you understand why the Mahayana always said that the phenomenal world is the world of consciousness. This is also the reason why the Surangama Sutra said, consciousness created the world and the continent, the stars, and the universe, and the knower becomes the living being. Through thought and form delusion, the knower deludedly clings on to the 5 aggregates of form and mind, or living being, thinking that it is real, and this is what they are. Hence, the deluded living being clinging onto the false becomes the traveler in space and time, wandering through samsara and undergoing birth and death for eternity. Note, true mind does not stir. True suchness or ru ru wu dong, Only the mundane mind serves that delusion. Mundane mind without wisdom is the discriminating thinking mind. Two, definition of hallucination, hallucinatory, thinking that it is real, but it is actually not real. Three, J. Krishnamurti said, the observer is the observed. This is seeing things as they are via direct seeing, without words. In a similar way, the Buddha also taught the same. In the seeing, it is only the seeing consciousness, and there is no one to see, hence no delusion. Otherwise, the moment you associate and cling onto what you see or what you observe, delusion or sakkaya ditti has already arisen. Part 2 Meditation 4.1 Virtualization Technique. Question 1. Can virtualization, like virtualizing a blue sky, be used as a technique to develop mindfulness? Father Chiang replied, this type of virtualization technique, like any other skillful means, if used with understanding, can also bring about the training of the mind to be peaceful and calm, just like auto-suggestion via music, sound and vibration, etc. But the disadvantage of this type of skillful means is that it usually only works for the first few times. And after a while, like good food, it loses its effectiveness. The other type of visualization technique using kasinas or the 40 objects of meditation used to develop one-pointedness concentration followed by the development of jhana and deep concentration leading to all the other psychic abilities is more dangerous unless it is done with understanding and preferably under a guidance of a very good and very skillful meditation teacher. If one clings and attaches to such one-pointedness concentration and special jhanic abilities, then one can get trapped and chances of deviation from the true cultivation of developing wisdom to free the mind from all suffering can happen. The mind that is in one-pointedness concentration is a conditioned mind that is still within the field of thought, and all the anusaya or latent tendency of the mind are still suppressed and not rooted out as yet. Such a mind is not a free mind with clear awareness or samadhi born of equanimity or wisdom. 2.2 The wisdom of letting see. Question 2. How to apply the wisdom of letting see to solve all our life problems? Father Chiang replied, with right view born of wisdom to accept the reality of the moment, we will not react or allow the mind to stir when confronted with the first noble truth, reality of life and existence, the eighth condition. Hence, no fear, no worry, and anxiety or any suffering. That is, we just let things be after accepting the reality of the moment. Then, with a calm and clear mind, we can weigh our options and act appropriately following the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, to resolve all our life situations or problems amicably, that is, without any negativity or wrong thoughts to cause our mind to stir. We can be at peace because wrong thoughts are thoughts that condition one's fear, worry, anxiety, unhappiness and misery, etc. Without wisdom and right view, born of understanding, the Buddha, again, without wisdom and right view, born of understanding the Buddha Dharma, one will react and the mind will stir due to the fear, worry and anxiety, etc. Born of their wrong view, just like normal deluded living beings, leading to all the mental suffering, grief, sorrow, and lamentation, etc. The cause of suffering is the self-delusion that conditions one's grasping, one's thinking, to one's five aspects of form and mind. This is the second noble truth. Under the third noble truth, the Buddha said, suffering need not be. If one has the wisdom and enlightenment, can be realized in the here and the now, or Nibbana is possible. Then, following the fourth noble truth, which is the way out of suffering, one cultivates the noble eightfold path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, leading to the end of all suffering.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. Let us stop here. And I think you all have to go for your whatever